Yeah, rehearsing with the girls is what I miss the most.
Well, it's going to be the soccer vaccine for me. I can't wait to see the gang again.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is there? Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Friday edition of CKUT's Community News Program, Off the Hour. Today is May 7th. My name is Brian Jefferson, and I will be your host today. CKUT broadcasts from the unceded traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Kanyekehaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. On the show today, we're talking about housing insecurity. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
But first, some news. Health Minister Christian Dubé and other provincial leaders announced this week that Montrealers 35 years and up can now book vaccinations. The minister dismissed the city's request to open terraces by June 1st. Restaurants will gradually reopen starting next week, despite Dubé's rejection of the terrace plan. And weekly COVID-19 numbers in Quebec and Montreal continue to fall as the vaccine rollout process gains momentum. The province's daily number of cases is at 919 as of May 6th. This is a slight drop from last Friday's total of 1,101 cases. And Montrealers rallied near the Papineau Metro on Thursday to show support for Colombian strikers. The country is seeing a series of strikes against a proposed tax hike to make up for pandemic-era losses. The national strike turned violent, and protesters say they want Colombian President Ivan Duque to address widespread poverty and job losses exacerbated by the pandemic.
My name is Sarah Becerra. I'm 16 years old. I've moved to Canada when I was about 4 years and a half. The government has always been corrupted, like really, really corrupted. And recently they wanted to file a tax reform that'll make everyone pay 19% of taxes. A fourth of the people that live in Colombia are really, really poor. So knowing that, the government still wants to do it because they say that they don't have any money to because of the pandemics. But that's not true because they bought a lot of money. They spent a lot of money on military and all military resources. And they want to cut funds of education and health. Then everyone's going outside to protest. But the government sees that as an act of terrorism because it's not what they want. So our government gave the order. Well, it's not proven, but we all know it's true. He gave the order to the military and the cops, which kill everyone that's violent. My family and my friends will see that I was here. It's just my way of standing next to them, even though I'm far away.
Leo, I'm sad. The situation in Colombia is really, really bad. Police are killing people, and the government doesn't accept the things they are doing. So it's too bad because a lot of people is dying for no reason. The principal problem in Colombia is the narcotraffic. The government have a narcotraffic deals. It's a narco-paramilitary government, so they control everything and they doesn't let us grow up like a country. Things never gonna be better. It's more than 50 years fighting against the same system, and we can't do anything. People already are tired, and that's the point at this moment. It's just a word to say we are here for my country.
And Montreal's first ghost bike was taken down after 7 years. Ghost bikes were created by Velo Fantôme and painted white to remember bikers who've been fatally hit. The bike that was taken down off Rue Saint-Denis on Sunday was a memorial for 33-year-old Mathilde Blais. It will now be housed at the Musée de la Civilisation de Québec.
CKUT
Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Okay, I gotta let you go. I have to get my Lake Magog vaccine.
Your Lake Magog vaccine?
Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to having the whole family to the cottage for my annual cookout.
Smart move. I'm gonna ask for the Montreal vaccine. I miss those last-minute get-togethers with my buddies.
Nice. Well, I gotta run. I don't think it protects against lateness.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to CKUT's Friday Off the Hour. The time is just after 5 p.m. My name is Brian Jefferson. Up first on this episode of Off the Hour, a tent encampment in Hochelaga was taken down after residents were evicted this week. This is the second encampment eviction in the city in 6 months. Sarah Jesmer has more.
Boise Steinberg is a large field in Hochelaga. Imagine a kilometer or so surrounded by industrial buildings and quiet but busy roads. There's groves of large trees in front and fields of golden tall grass in the back. Transport Quebec, or the Provincial Ministry of Transportation of Quebec, says they own this land for preservation purposes. But to this young woman, who wants to remain nameless for safety reasons, the lot has also been her home. It's her first time here.
Probably a week. I don't know. My boyfriend was living here first, so I don't know.
She used a red broom to sweep up the plot she was staying on.
I made a mess, I cleaned it up. I think I'm the only person that's cleaning the area because I respect my home.
Boise Steinberg was a good place to stay, she said. Waking up to the quiet fields around her made her think of home and being out on the land with family and friends growing up in Nunavik.
Yeah, I used to camp a lot. When it rains and birds, it's like nature.
Before coming here, she was using a series of local shelters, but conditions there varied. And they're not always what people want to be around, pandemic or not.
On the streets or shelters? Well, some shelters are good. Some are, Some people are crazy. As of crazy means alcoholic people.
And before that, she stayed at Notre Dame Encampment.
It was the best. Yeah, I have a lot of memories there. A lot of good ones, too.
The encampment on Notre Dame Street was near Square Desiree in 2020. The city relaxed its camping and parks bylaws last summer because of overfilling at local shelters during the pandemic. A green space near Hochelaga started filling up with dozens of people in tents, in trailers, to make a tent city. She's here today sweeping because Boise Steinberg is being cleared by police today. Transport Quebec has given her and her boyfriend and their neighbors an eviction notice. And they're moving out before police show up.
They're just jealous people. That's all I know. That we don't have to pay rent.
The same type of eviction happened in December in 2020 in Notre Dame. Residents were kicked out of Square Desiree and told to disperse for safety reasons and ushered into shelters. It sounded like this.
Mm-hmm.
The tenth city on Notre Dame formed in summer of 2020. It's not the only one in the city, and it wasn't the last. But it was highly visible and big, which was different than the tents trying to stay hidden in Montreal. Many say the encampment visibly represented the housing crisis that Montreal has been experiencing for years now, fanned by COVID economic troubles. There were more than 50 tents here on the day it was taken down, December 7th. A fire engulfed a tent the previous week because people used their own makeshift heaters to stay warm. The fire was reason enough for the city to say it's time to clear the square and shuffle people into temporary winter shelters, like Hotel Place des Puits. Some residents still said they'd rather live outside, given the choice, because they were free to do as they please. And advocates have been saying that relocating residents doesn't do anything to solve why they ended up by Notre Dame in the first place. Campers at both Notre Dame and Boise Steinberg use Facebook to post live videos and calls for donations or actions. At Notre Dame, the moderator, Tommy, posted a notice of eviction residents got from the city the day after the recent fire. They asked people to come and stand with them early in the morning on the day of eviction. And about 100 people showed up. Police taped off the square and some of the surrounding streets. The tenting area was separated. There was a square for media, a line of police officers on bikes, some on horses, and some in riot gear. A crowd gathered on the west end of the camp as the highway of Notre Dame blared on the side. Someone printed out the criminal code. He leans over the orange police tape while calling out about how campers have done nothing wrong, citing specific articles in the civil code. The crowd kept growing. Everyone's simply waiting as the last residents gathered their things, and sounds of honking, dogs barking, cheers, laughing, clapping, chanting, and yelling all punctuated the regular symphony you might find here, like trucks and trains. This was all part of the last minutes of Notre Dame camp. And then 8 a.m. hit. Around 8:20 on December 7th, officers with clipboards and clear bags slowly began going tent to tent. They spray-painted the empty tents and the ground in front of them with a number, code 1 through 10. The city cleared the lot and garbage trucks came to clear out the belongings of things that were left. In a news briefing after the Notre Dame eviction, Mayor Valerie Plante said her administration has done all it can to combat the causes of homelessness and that the provincial government must now step in. She says the issue is about lack of funds and, quote, power to build, end quote. Experts and residents say these encampments and their circumstances are caused by lack of affordable housing, poverty, and the infantilizing of the people in them, like they have no choice. There are so many reasons that people choose to live here, in these camps, and no two people are alike. And the lack of housing and addressing long-term policy solutions has manifested into another eviction at Boise Steinberg now, in 2021, where this camper is cleaning up her last things. A group of advocates answered a call for people to be here when the Boise Steinberg eviction happened on May 3rd. They got here early in the morning, just like supporters did at Notre Dame last winter. This is Adam Amsel.
There's still no police presence, so I mean, it's definitely a different feeling from the Notre Dame encampment last year. Like, by the time we got there, by daybreak, there was already, like, over 20 police cruisers. So this is a sort of waiting game, I think, more so. Like, the campers weren't up yet, so this is, you know, kind of slowly starting the day, and I think part of it is feeling out the situation. If the police don't end up sweeping in today, then people are going to come back tomorrow and the next day and to see what happens.
And this is Sophie Hart, a community intervention worker who runs mutual aid group Meals for Milton Park.
I think what they, like, what was needed was just people to be here, supportive people, because they have everything they need. People have been living here for over 4 years. There's, like, used to be infrastructure just over there, but there's a tent full of, like, generators, food, there's a fridge, they got bathrooms. So what was needed today and, like, what's going to be needed is just people to physically be there, and either be barriers or be supportive of people who want to move out, or just standing in solidarity when people are moved out against their will.
The Notre Dame encampment was significantly further politicized. Like, there was a lot of rhetoric around its setup in a way that Sophie just mentioned. This one is a group of people who've been here, some of them more than 4 years. So Notre Dame encampment drew a lot of people very quickly, led to a lot of neighborhood reactionary sort of alarmism, and a swift police presence to follow. So there was a very conscious, primarily political aim to the confrontation that happened the day of the eviction, whereas here, a lot of what's happening is community support, where people who are well-established are, like, a lot more vocal and pointed with what their needs are. Like, I think people just want to stay in a place that they've sort of set up as their own and be able to work towards whatever various goals they're looking to work towards in a way that isn't coerced. You know, like, in both situations, though, to speak of some similarities, the city is saying that they're willing to help people. What that amounts to is, rather than, like, putting the solutions in place first, throwing them out of what they've autonomously decided as what they want to be doing in the meantime into a shelter system that people don't feel comfortable in, and then sort of saying, oh yeah, we'll build social housing down the road or whatever.
Yeah, especially during a pandemic as well. Like, people don't want to be in the shelter system, first of all, because often it's not safe, but also during a pandemic, it's recommended by the CDC not to take down encampments right now. So it's just kind of a backwards game that the city's playing. I don't start work for like multiple days, so I'm planning on being here every day until it's needed. But until curfew probably.
It feels violent. Like, it's so strange seeing a city that's generally so vibrant shut down, and like some of the only people that are out and about are Uber Eats drivers, police, and unsheltered folks, and just like, obviously people aren't like stopping to chat with the Uber Eats drivers, so there's just a lot more interaction, and you would think or hope that some of that would lead to rapport building and a better way of dealing with these situations. And just to see over and over again that not happening gets really, really frustrating. So what it's like to live in Montreal right now is sort of like energy sucking on top of everything else that's already energy sucking about this year. Just like that the police are just this consistent blunt object used against people who are just trying to like find a way to get by.
Michel Monet is the general manager of CARE Montreal, a shelter in Hochelaga. In a comment to CKUT, Monet said it's not that there are more camps in Hochelaga. It's just that they get the most media attention. There are also camps in places like Verdun and the Plateau. He said he sees rising rates of homelessness in the Hochelaga neighborhood. And while CARE shelters see around 300 clients, he says camps are necessary because shelters aren't meant for everyone. Autonomy truly means autonomy, living as people want. He says this particular lot was home to people for at least 10 years, even before the pandemic. And Monet says evictions happen when politicians think camps get too big to control. The group waited hours in this lot as Boise Steinberg residents cleared up their tents and left, while others stayed put. Hundreds of police started showing up in riot gear in the early afternoon and ordered everyone out of the lot, supporters and residents alike. But the question remains, to where?
Are you guys going to help us find an apartment? Are you guys going to kick us out on my land? If not, don't bother me.
So where are you going to go now?
I don't know. Somewhere Montreal doesn't see me. So I won't get kicked out anymore. We fixed the whole tent for 8 hours just to make it straight. And someone comes by and say, you have to put it down. Just stop kicking us out on my land.
Thanks to Joel Somadol, who contributed to this reporting. I'm Sarah Jesmer, and you are listening to CKUT.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Brian Jefferson. We talked about housing and encampments in the first half of the hour. Heads in Hands is a local youth-focused nonprofit. Sophie from Heads in Hands hosted a Q&A with the Montreal lawyer, Maître Gabor Glatz, about solutions to housing insecurity. We'll tune in and bring you back at the top of the hour.
Yeah, so there's a few people already here. Welcome to our second Ask a Lawyer series. This one is on your rights as a tenant with Maître Gabor Glatz. We have a few questions that we've already written out, and you can feel free to like comment in the chat. We have some, we have the legal coordinator that's on the chat able to like answer any additional questions that we don't get to, or if you would like those questions answered in French, definitely just comment or DM us or send us an email. So I kind of wanted to start by talking about like rent during the pandemic, because I remember like we used to have the moratorium on rent, trying to give some rent forgiveness to tenants who maybe had lost their jobs because of COVID. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about cases where, you know, tenants maybe haven't been able to pay their full rent during COVID, and how are these cases being ruled by the Régie du logement?
Okay, my understanding is that there was no rent moratorium per se. What there was a government decree passed in March, mid-March 2020, whereby eviction judgments of the rental board were suspended for a certain period of time. But that ended in July, I believe, early July, and mid to late July, depending on when the eviction notice, when the eviction judgment was rendered. So if it was rendered pre-March, I think the moratorium on evictions ended July 10th. If it was after March, then July 20th. So since July 20th, my understanding is that there is no moratorium or restriction anymore on evictions. And of course, the eviction moratorium applied whether you were evicted because of non-payment of rent or frequent late payment, or whether it was a repossession or something like that, or eviction for renovations, for example. So all of those evictions were suspended until July. But since July, we're back to the original situation. And it means that whether you've lost your job or whether your earnings have gone down because of COVID or not, you must pay the full rent. And if you were in arrears of rent relying on the moratorium on evictions, you should have to pay the arrears of rent fully in order to avoid the eviction.
So you have to back pay all of your rent, basically.
There's no forgiveness of rent. Unless, of course, the landlord has agreed in writing to do so.
Okay, so it's really, So there's really no options for tenants who, let's say, like, aren't able to catch up on all of those, like, maybe non-payments or half payments of rent that they did, during the period of a moratorium on evictions.
Right. Well, except that, as I said earlier, if the tenant and the landlord agree in writing to spread out the arrears over the next year or so, or to forego part of the arrears as a result of COVID, then that's okay. Then you follow that agreement. But it has to be by agreement with the landlord, and it should be in writing.
Okay. I also wanted to touch a little bit about the public and private long-term care homes, because like also during the pandemic, we've seen like just a crisis there with how like our elderly folks are being treated. And a lot have died of COVID or have been exposed to COVID unnecessarily. And so I'm wondering what like families can do or what current residents of long-term care homes mm-hmm. can do, if anything, and what responsibility does like the government and these companies have to those people?
Well, in general, if these homes and the people who ran or run the homes were negligent, and if you can prove it, which is the really hard part, then you can collect damages as a result of their negligence. But it's under the general sections of the Civil Code. There's no specific provision in the law that that allows people to sue for COVID because of the COVID situation. So if you can prove that your long-term care home administrator did not follow the general guidelines or the general rules that these homes should follow at the time of COVID, then, and if you can prove that, then you can collect damages. So if your relative has died and you can prove that the negligence and prove the damages as a result of the death, then you should be able to collect or obtain a judgment and eventually collect money from the administrator of the home. But I think the big problem will be in trying to prove that the home did not follow the usual rules that homes would have to follow under these circumstances.
And you think that would be hard to prove? Because there's a lot of the homes that people are saying that, you know, the folks have been like unattended to for several days, or short staffing, moving staff from one home to another, mm-hmm. that sort mm-hmm. of thing.
Well, again, if you can prove all of that, and yet if you can prove that the person died because of that negligence, so it's a two-level proof. You have to prove the negligence, prove that it's mm-hmm. beyond the normal standards. And secondly, you have to be able to prove from a medical point of view, a medical expertise point of view, that the person died as a result of that negligence. Now, there are presumptions okay. in law. You may be able to use presumptions, but it's not a sure thing by any means, and it may take years to go through the courts, and people would have to mm-hmm. pay their lawyers in the meantime, whether they collect or not, depending on the arrangement they make with their lawyer.
It's outrageous. Okay. We've also seen, especially in Montreal, currently like a lot of rent evictions, mm-hmm. A lot of turning over of apartments, a lot of empty apartments now being used as Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you can like respond to people who, yeah, maybe they are worried about being rent evicted. Maybe they're getting that notice. What can they do? What does that process look like, that eviction process look like? And is there anything you can do to fight it?
Well, look, rent evictions follow the general rules on major renovations and improvements. So the Civil Code of Quebec says a landlord of residential premises has the right to ask the tenant to permit major renovations to the leased premises. The landlord may want the tenant to move out depending on the type of renovations. And if the landlord wants the tenant to move out for more than 10 days, then the notice is different than if the move to allow the renovation or the improvement is for less than 10 days. So people can go on the Régie du Logement site. Of course, the Régie du Logement is now called Le Tribunal Administratif du Logement, but the website of the old Régie and the new Tribunal, Lodging Tribunal, has all kinds of advice in these situations. So if you go to the search part of the website for the Tribunal, and you put in, for example, access, it'll have a whole blurb on the law of accessing the premises by the landlord or by the tenant. So again, we're talking about major repairs and renovations. The rules are set out in the Civil Code. if people do a search of major renovations on the tribunal website, they will see a blurb on what the rules are and what the delays are. But basically, the tenant who is given a notice and the landlord cannot proceed to do major renovations without preparing a proper notice and without putting into that notice what is required by the civil code. So the civil code starts at 1922 as to how these notices for major renovations should look like. And if I look up 1922, it'll say no major improvement or major repairs other than urgent repairs may be made in a dwelling without a prior notice from the landlord to the tenant. And if it's necessary for the tenant to vacate temporarily until the landlord has offered him an indemnity equal to the reasonable expenses that the tenant will have to incur as a result of the vacation. And 1923 sets out what should be in the notice. So the date of the start and the end of the renovation, so the duration has to be mentioned, and the amount of the indemnity that's offered where there's a temporary vacating of the premises that's required. Now, if those conditions are not met, or if the tenant feels that the conditions aren't proper, there's a short delay for filing an application with the tribunal, and then the tribunal will set the conditions for the major renovations. Also, sometimes it happens that landlords ask for repossession for a relative, or they ask for vacating the premises so they can proceed with renovations, major renovations. If the landlord does not proceed with those major renovations, or if the landlord does not repossess for the relative who he claimed he would repossess for, then there are, of course, damages that can be requested by the tenant. So if the landlord is being dishonest, if he's notifying tenants that he wants to do major renovations and doesn't go ahead and do major renovations, and the tenant had to move out as a result of that, even temporarily, and the landlord does not proceed to do those renovations, then the tenant can apply for damages as a result of the bad faith notice sent by the landlord.
Okay, but in terms of just refusing the renovations, like let's say we're not talking about minor renovations, we're just talking about a landlord who wants to completely upgrade the apartment so that they can increase mm-hmm. rent. Is there a way to fight that rent eviction?
Not really, not under the civil code. The landlord has the right to do what he wants to do with his apartment. The tenant, of course, has the right to maintain the lease. So there are provisions in the civil code for the tenant moving back in after the renovations, if the tenant wishes to do so. He's not obliged to do so, but if he wants to do so, he gives the landlord his new address, his temporary address, while the renovations continue. And then the landlord is obligated to notify him once the renovations are done, and the tenant will have the choice of moving back in or not. But other than that,
okay, that's super interesting.
Other than that, the tenant cannot say, no, I don't want the upgrade. The theory being that we're in a free market situation, and although there's quite a bit of protection for tenants in the civil code, the landlord should, under this philosophy, be permitted to do whatever he wants with the premises, of course, subject to the tenant's rights to have the rental board, the old rental board, the new tribunal, Tribunal Administratif du Logement, to examine the conditions and make sure the conditions are fair and reasonable for both sides.
Okay. And like, let's say that the tenant does want to move back in after the renovations. Like, how is the rent fixed after that? Like, the tenants is still on the lease.
Well, for
but by how much can it be increased?
For the period of the lease, so let's say there's a July 1st, 2020 lease to June 30th, 2021, and the landlord in December, so now, sends a notice saying that there will be major renovations. And let's say the tenant moves back in February after the major renovations are done. For the balance of the lease, the tenant cannot be obliged to pay an increased rent. But come July 1st, and of course the landlord has to send a notice 3 to 6 months before the end of the current lease period, so it would be from January to March. So the landlord will be allowed to send a notice, let's say in mid-March, saying to this tenant who has moved back in after major renovations that his lease will, that his rent will be increased. And at that point, it's a regular fixation du loyer. So if the tenant does not accept the rent increase that the landlord is asking for, he can refuse, send a notice of refusal. Civil code, and then the landlord has to apply to the tribunal to have the rent set. At that point, when the hearing comes up, the landlord will be allowed to claim the cost of the major renovations as a component of the rent increase. Of course, it's not the full amount of the renovation costs that goes into the new rent. The renovation cost is amortized by a formula that the Tribunal Administratif du Logement applies, and basically the renovation costs are spread out over 5 or 10 years according to the Régie's calculation, to the Tribunal's calculation.
Okay, that's so good to know. I didn't know that it continued on, like, even after the renovations, that that first tenant still had, like, the right to keep their apartment
if
they wanted to do so.
But again, the rent remains the same, but only for the period until the new lease comes up, the renewal comes up, and at that point, the landlord will be able to increase the rent using the cost of the renovations as well as any other increasing costs that he had, such as insurance or taxes or heating if the apartment is heated.
Okay. And if the landlord does want to repossess, let's say to like live in the apartment themselves or for like a family member to live in the apartment, it's the same kind of process? They have to give 3 to 6 months notice to the tenant and there's nothing the tenant can do about it?
No. The delays are different. For a one-year lease, the landlord has to be the owner 6 months, at least 6 months prior to the end of the current lease, and the landlord has to send a notice of repossession that applies at the end of the lease, and the notice has to be sent at least 6 months prior to the end of the lease. So for a repossession, in our example of a July 1st, 2020 lease to June 30th, 2021, the landlord would have to, if it's a new landlord, he would have to be the registered owner on the registry office records of the property prior to December 31st. And the notice to the tenant that he is repossessing for himself or a member of his family has to be sent prior to December 31st as well. The reason I mentioned the registry office is because we've seen situations where new owners buy the property and they sign the offer and the acceptance before December, but the signing at the notaries is done after December, so in January. If that's the case, and the deed of sale is not signed before a notary and not registered at the registry office prior to the start of the new year, January, in our example lease, then the new owner will not be able to repossess until the next year, so 2022. But if he is the registered owner prior to the end of December and sends the notice prior to December for the 1st of July, then that notice is valid and the tenant can contest, can respond and say, no, I'm not accepting the repossession, in which case the landlord would have to apply to the rental board to have a hearing. So it's the rental tribunal. And then the tribunal looks mm-hmm. into whether the landlord is in good faith and whether he really intends to do what he says he intends to do, put himself or a relative in.
Okay. That's interesting. It happened to me before where my landlord was saying that the apartment was going to be taken over by their son, and then we found out, like, through word of mouth that the son actually lived in, like, the apartment mm-hmm. next door, and so he wasn't going to use it. And I always wondered, like, should I have been compensated? Like, what would that process look like about, like, holding those landlords accountable for lying?
Yeah, well, if you were repossessed, and it doesn't have to be a judgment. You could have agreed to the repossession, assuming that your landlord was in good faith when he told you in writing that he wanted his son to move in there. And then he doesn't put his son in there. If you realize that, if you, let's say, have friends in the area and they tell you the son never moved in after you moved out, you can take an action at the rental tribunal for damages. So your moving expenses, if you have to pay a higher rent for a similar apartment, you can ask for the increased rent that you now have to pay somewhere else as part of the damages. And usually you should be able to win as long as you can prove that the son did not move in. However, the rental board has the discretion to listen to the landlord and to listen to the reason why the son didn't move in. So, for example, if he intends to have his son move in and the son, let's say, dies in the process and can't move in, then even though you moved out and you suffered damages as a result of the repossession that never took place, the rental tribunal will decide in that case that because the son died in the meantime, that's a good reason for the landlord not having gone through with putting his son in. Also, I think I saw a case when I was doing some research where the landlord's daughter and new husband were supposed to move in, and the marriage never took place, and the rental board decided that that was a good reason for the repossession not to have taken place as planned, and the tribunal rejected the tenant's request for damages. So generally, you will be able to collect damages, but the landlord may have a valid reason for not proceeding with the repossession. And of course, the same applies for the renovation. If the landlord doesn't proceed with the renovation, and you, as the tenant, were obliged to move out temporarily, causing you some expenses, you won't be able to collect those expenses if, in trying to do so, the tribunal finds that the landlord had a very good reason outside of his control to not do the renovations.
Okay. We got a question that was about, so let's say that you move into an apartment mm-hmm. after the previous lease had been over, and so you didn't get the lease transfer. So is the landlord able to, like, increase the rent as much as possible in this case?
Not sure I understand what you're saying.
Sorry. So let's say a lease comes to an mm-hmm. end, and then after, like, 1 month, other tenants come in.
Okay.
And so the previous lease has ended. It's not a lease transfer.
Right. And a new tenant moves in?
A new tenant.
And either right away or a month later, a new tenant moves in and the rent is a lot higher. Well, first of all, there's an obligation in all leases for the land, all new leases for the landlord to write the amount of the previous rent. In other words, the lowest rent that was paid in the previous 12 months. Okay, prior to the new lease. So if you're a new tenant, you're planning to move in July 1st, 2021, you're paying $1,500, but the landlord is supposed to tell you what the lowest rent in the previous 12 months to your lease, to what that rent was. If you're paying $1,500, the previous lowest rent in the last 12 months was $1,000, then the increase is $500, and you as the new tenant have 10 days to apply to the tribunal, very short delay, to say, to ask for a rent readjustment. You're obliged to pay $1,500 according to the new lease, but you can have that rent reviewed by the rental board in the same way as if the previous tenant was asked for an increase on a renewal for his lease, and he was asked a $500 increase on a $1,000 rent. That would be a 50% increase. Of course, that's way too much, and usually that's not sanctioned by the régie. So the new tenant is in the same position as long as he or she applies within 10 days of receiving the lease, being signed. Now, the delays are somewhat longer if the landlord did not fill in that part of the lease that tells the new tenant what the previous tenant was paying. So the delay will be a lot longer. I believe it's a month after the lease, but we would have to check that. I'm not certain. There's also a situation where the landlord may provide the wrong amount. So if the landlord misleads the new tenant and says the previous tenant was paying $1,400 instead of $1,000, then again the delays are even longer, and I think they run from the time that the new tenant finds out about the falsehood. So that could be months into the new lease, and of course the tribunal will reset the rent from the start of the lease. So in that situation, even though 6 months may have passed and the new tenant was paying the $1,500, if there's a reduction, it'll be retroactive to the start of that lease. Well, I hope,
okay, that's super interesting. Yeah, and what about in the case where, like, the apartment is vacant for a year before you sign the lease, or, like, it's an Airbnb and then they are converting it into an apartment? Do you have any rights in those cases?
I believe that in the first scenario that you described, where the apartment is empty for a year, I'm not sure, but I believe that in that case, the landlord will not be subject to these rules and the tribunal will not set the rent. So I'd have to look into that. I can't tell you off the top of my head. Airbnb, also, if it's obviously people who rent out their apartments, owners who rent out their apartments under Airbnb can get a much higher rent than renting it out on a month-to-month or a year-to-year basis. My educated guess would be that in that situation, if the place has been an Airbnb rental for, let's say, a year or two, and then the landlord starts renting it out year by year, then these sections do not apply.
Okay. I mean, Quebec did pass that bill like a little while ago, creating that registry for Airbnb. I don't know if you heard about that.
I didn't, but I saw your reference to it. Again, my educated guess would be to say that that does not affect the rental law. The fact that Quebec has a registry of Airbnb owners doesn't change the rental rules. Of course, these sections of the civil code on rental law do not apply to Airbnb rentals. But if the municipality has restricted the zoning in a certain area and does not allow Airbnb rentals, then of course landlords can't rent out their premises under Airbnb.
Okay. I heard that like the city of Montreal was designating certain boroughs as tourist areas that like weren't tourist areas before, so that like Airbnb could like take place there. So does that just means that those previous tenants that were there just kind of get kicked out?
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Let's say you live in a residence that's rented. You've got a year lease and it's renewed each year. You've been there a few years. All of a sudden, the city designates that area as being a tourist area, and Airbnbs are now allowed. You can't be evicted because the landlord wants to now rent your apartment as an Airbnb. You can't be evicted in the middle of your lease, and you can't be evicted even at the end of your lease. The landlord can't put an end to your lease at the end of your lease if you don't want to leave, simply because he now is allowed under provincial rules or municipal rules to rent your place as an Airbnb. If at the end of your lease, let's say you have that one-year lease from July 1st, 2020 to June 30th, 2021, and at the end of your lease, Sophie, you want to leave and go somewhere else. Well, if the area is, if you're permitted to rent Airbnbs in that area now, the landlord can decide to take your apartment off the market, off the year-to-year rental market, and rent it out as an Airbnb. So I don't think there's anything in the law that prevents him from doing that. But if you, Sophie, you want to renew your lease in July of 2021 when your one-year lease ends, the landlord can't say to you, no, I'm not renewing your lease. All he can do is increase the rent or change other conditions of the lease, but you have a right to be maintained in your premises as long as you want, no matter what, unless the landlord, we talked about it before, wants to repossess for himself or for his family, or if the landlord can justify temporary evacuation for major renovations. Other than that, tenants have the right, if they want, to be maintained in their residence at the end of their lease.
Okay, that's really good to know. I wouldn't have assumed that with the designated tourist zones, but that's really good to know that people can stay there as long as they wish. We have a question that's saying, what are common compensation if I get evicted for upgrading reasons?
Well, usually it's a temporary evacuation. Okay, so if the landlord wants you to evacuate for 3 months because he's doing major renovations, and you plan to move back in, well, then the moving expenses is part of the damages, moving away and moving back. And if you have to pay higher rent temporarily because you're only moving out for 3 months and you get similar accommodations, but you're paying $500 more a month, you can try to include the $500 extra that you're paying somewhere else as part of the damages. There may be, if you're elderly and you need the moving company not just to move you, but to pack your boxes, then packing too may be part of the damages. If you need to install cable and internet in your new place temporarily because of the evacuation, that too, the cost of cable and internet installation will be part of the damages as well.
Okay. Is it just upfront costs, or do you get like extra compensation just for like the hassle of having to move?
I don't believe that that's the case. Let me see if I can find that quickly. So major renovations, 1922. So the code, the civil code for these things talks about indemnity. And it says that if the indemnity that's offered, because the landlord has to offer an indemnity, is not reasonable, and the code talks about reasonable expenses incurred, if there isn't enough indemnity being offered, again, the tenant can apply to the tribunal and have the tribunal set the reasonable indemnity. And although the code doesn't define what that indemnity would be, my opinion is that it would be moving expenses away and back, installing cable and internet, and packing if you can't pack yourself, if you're elderly or if you're disabled, the increased cost of having to be somewhere else in a similar accommodation, but because it's temporary, you have to pay more on a monthly basis than the extra amount that you're paying are part of the damages that you can claim.
What? My radio stuck on CKUT. I don't know. But nah, fix it. CKUT, the number one radio station in Montreal. We give you the sun, the moon, the rain, the stars and the mountain. CKUT give you the word.
Welcome back to CKUT. You were just listening to Heads and Hands Ask a Lawyer series with Maître Gabra Glatz. Heads and Hands hosts free 30-minute appointments with a lawyer if you need any legal help on housing. They're at 514-481-0277 or legal at headsandhands.ca.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
And now, some news that you can use. May 5th was a global day of awareness for the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Indigenous women face disproportionate rates of violence at home, at work, and in public. Quebec Native women and the Université du Québec of Montréal are looking into how this crisis manifests locally and put into a study this year. They're hosting a webinar about their findings on May 18th at 6 p.m. You can find more information at faq-qnw.org. or listen to Off the Hour in the coming weeks for more coverage. And the housing advocacy group, Regroupement Information Logement, are protesting with community groups tomorrow for more social housing units. They want more investment into building and more follow-up on promised homes. That's tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. at the Dog Park outside of Metro Lucien Lallier. And in community theater, the McGill Savoy Society is putting on an online production of the opera HMS Pinafore this weekend. The opera is put on by students and local musicians and streams this Saturday at 7 p.m. on YouTube Live. You can find more information on the McGill Savoy Society's Facebook page. And that concludes this Friday's edition of Off the Hour, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective.
The collective includes our host Brian Jefferson, Kate Addison, Alice Wu, Joel Somadal, and me, Sarah Jesmer.
For more information on anything you heard tonight, or if you would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041 extension 7000 or news intern at CKUT.ca. Also, you can follow us on Instagram at OffTheHour or connect with us on Facebook. Just search CKUT. Stay tuned for Cafe coming up next.
À participer au recensement est arrivé par la poste. Votre participation aidera à planifier des programmes et des services pour votre collectivité. Votre recensement, votre collectivité, votre avenir. Un message du gouvernement du Canada.
Bonsoir à tous, ici Ève Laurence au micro pour Café, votre émission d'art et culture du vendredi. Aujourd'hui, Alex s'entretient avec l'excellente artiste montréalaise Claude Lanthrope qui souligne la sortie de son tout nouveau single « Allô sexuel ». Esther s'est entretenue avec la commissaire Cecilia Brackmore dans le cadre de l'exposition « Résurgence, Reclaiming My Place ». Et puis moi, je vous présente un petit listing de quelques festivals annoncés cet été avec peut-être ce que l'on pourrait voir comme un retour en force de l'événementiel, mais cette fois-ci en région, à l'extérieur de la métropole. Bonne émission! Bonsoir tout le monde, c'est Alex qui vous parle. Vous êtes toujours à l'émission Café sur les ondes de CKUT. Cette semaine, j'ai eu la chance de m'entretenir avec l'excellente artiste queer montréalaise Claude Lanthrope.